Welcome to Speaking in Maine on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network, a public affairs program dedicated to bringing you speeches recorded from around the state, given by experts lecturing on topics from environmentalism and sustainability to the global economy, politics, and beyond. I'm Gordon Fellis. Today's program comes to us from the University of Southern Maine and will feature representatives of Roman Catholicism, Judaism, and Islam, who are known both nationally and internationally for their efforts to create a climate of interreligious cooperation that challenges the forces of religious extremism, violence, and hatred. The talk is titled, Beyond Nostra Aetate, Interreligious Dialogue in a Time of Conflict. First, giving introductory remarks is Reza Jalali, Coordinator of Multicultural Student Affairs at USM.
My name is Reza Jalali, and on behalf of the host committee, it's my distinct pleasure to welcome you to this evening's program and to University of Southern Maine. Thank you for being here. Months ago, when I met with my dear friends, Father Senghaus, Professor Peck, and Reverend Whittemore, to start a conversation and to plan tonight's event, I had no idea how the community would respond. And tonight I'm delighted to see that the response has been very, very positive. Thank you for responding to our humble invitation to come together as children of Abraham to have a conversation heart to heart. We begin this much-needed and important dialogue tonight to remind ourselves of our shared history and a common future, and to find ways to repair our broken world, as our Jewish brothers and sisters say, Tikkun Olam. And what does Nostra Aetate mean? What does have to do with that? Well, a quick story. A week ago, a young student was about to ask me the same question when her friend, an 18-year-old, beaming with this high level and some would say dangerous level of overconfidence, interrupted our conversation and suggested that Nostra Aetate was a Spanish for interfaith dinner. You see, these days, thanks or no thanks to the online search engines, the Wikipedia, as adults we could feel less useful. So as hardly we are asked any questions by those younger than us. Questions, and by that I mean some deep questions, thoughtful, such as exactly what is a flappy disk? Oh, is it true you used to travel carrying a large video camera, a smaller camera to take pictures, paper road maps, cassette players with cassettes? Working at this university that has thousands of young people, as you can see here in this room, we're so delighted to have many of them here with us tonight, I walk around searching for the inquiring minds. I watch faces for clues. I wait and wait to be asked as questions that would require this long and detailed and thoughtful soul-searching responses. The most I get are, when is the next bus to Gorham campus? Or where is the financial aid office located? So this evening, I am about to change that. I'm not going to let this opportunity slip me by, and I'm going to talk about why we're doing this. 50 years ago, the world of interreligious relations was transformed when the hundreds of Roman Catholic bishops agreed on a document that began with the words Nostra Aetate in Latin, in our time. It came at a time when the Roman Catholic Church looked deep within its own theological teachings and a spiritual soul, to conclude that it was time to move beyond its troubled history of relationship with its sister, two sister religions, Judaism and Islam. Tonight you're going to hear a lot about Nasra Ithate, but I think part of its power was that the fact that it rejected for all time the nearly 2,000-year-old dreadful charge that Jews were cursed for eternity, quote-unquote, by God. In many ways, our world became a brighter place. 50 years later, we will remember the past, ponder the present, and the future. Just as religious extremism, violence, and hatred in the name of religion, poverty and indifference threaten the future of mankind, of humanity, the world, and our planet, our only home. 800 years ago, my master, Jalaluddin Rumi, the popular Muslim Sufi and saint, said, and I quote, "Speak a new language so that the world will be a new world. Speak a new language so that the world will be a new place." Indeed, tonight, we would speak the language of respect, acceptance, inclusion, hope, and love. Now, it's my distinct honor and pleasure to introduce the University of Southern Maine's leader, a friend and ally, President Glenn Cummings. I'm known to say that President Cummings doesn't need an introduction, but I'm also mindful that there are many, many young people here who may or may not know him the way we all do. An educator, an elected official who has spent many years in public service, a thoughtful policymaker, a Mainer who has served our great state well, whether in Augusta or in Washington, D.C. I can go on and on. I think you guessed it. I'm a big-time fan, one of the many. So please join me to welcome President Cummings.
Thank you, Reza. And I don't know who that 18-year-old was that came, but we are going to have to do dinner, I think, tonight. So hang on. Please join me in, first of all, thanking the host committee, and specifically Reza Jalali, our Director of Multicultural Affairs, for his outstanding leadership in bringing this evening to make it happen. I'm delighted to welcome Aman Hindi and Rabbi Sanmel and Bishop Kennedy to the University of Southern Maine tonight and for this discussion. A good university is the marketplace of ideas, but a great university is a place where we create healing, understanding, and knowledge. I've always been greatly influenced by the story in Man's Search for Meaning of Viktor Frankl, who in the middle of his Holocaust survival story, that he came to the conclusion that he had misunderstood life, that he had believed his entire life that it was about what life he wanted and what he expected from life. In the midst of what must be the most trying experience of any human being on earth, he came to a bizarre conclusion in that context. The conclusion was, what does life expect of me? What is it that the universe expects me to do? Today, you have three representatives from some of the world's great religions who have answered that question for themselves. And they're answering it today in front of you. Answering that question with, the world expects me to bring peace and to bring understanding and to bring healing. That is what this night is about. Please join me in welcoming all of them to the stage And thank you again for being here.
Bishop Robert Dealey is the Bishop of the Catholic Diocese of Portland, Maine, which is the entire state. Since his ordination in 1973, Bishop Dealey has been very active in interreligious and ecumenical affairs, and when this program was first proposed to him, he was very enthusiastic. And since then, he has given us his warm support. And I want to take this opportunity to thank you, Bishop Dealey, for your great support of this program, both your spiritual support and your very substantial material support, without which this program would not have been possible. Thank you, Bishop Dealey.
Thank you, Father Richard. I appreciate that. I think for all of us, Catholics, Jews, Muslims, it's always good to have some food when we get together. So it was important that we make sure we have some food, so it's a good thing to do that. Tonight I just want to say it's a joy to be with you. It's a wonderful event. You'll recall that in September, Pope Francis was among us, and what is the theme tonight of dialogue and the ability to, that Nostra Aetate opened to us to talk to each other in ways that we had not been able to do or had not done previous to that, is very important. Pope Francis continues to encourage us to dialogue for a specific reason. I was at a school visit a few weeks ago, right after the Pope had been here, and I asked the children what it was that they remembered, and it was amazing that the most important thing that they remembered from what Pope Francis had said while he was in the United States was the golden rule: do unto others as you would have them do unto you. There's a truth in that golden rule which is contained in our coming together tonight. As the program relates to us, Nostra Aetate reminded us that the beliefs and practices of other religions often reflect a ray of that truth which illuminates all human beings. When we come to understand the worth of each of us as a human being, we need to get to know each other better, and we need to appreciate each other the more because of that truth which illuminates all of us, the spirit of the Almighty which breathes within us and motivates us and guides us. Dialogue is so needed in our world so that we can grow in appreciation of our humanity. Bishop Kennedy is one of the auxiliary bishops in the Archdiocese of Boston. And I was looking over his curriculum vitae and realized that he was studying in Rome in his last year of school, theology studies prior to ordination, when in fact the document was promulgated. In 1965. In his remarks tonight, I'm sure he will show you that he is able to bring together in synthesis many ideas so that we might have a better understanding of the dialogue that Nostra Aetate calls us to. I'm very grateful to him for coming to Portland, for making the long trip up from Boston. Sorry we didn't have any snow for you, Bishop Arthur. But we're very, very grateful to him for coming and grateful to all of you for being here. What a wonderful turnout. This is great.
It is a great pleasure to be with you this evening, and we had a wonderful afternoon with some of the students from the high schools in Portland as well. And we had the opportunity together to be able to listen in on the way in which each of us has come to an understanding of the great importance that our time indeed really has. And that is especially the case because of the fact that the need for a conversation that allows us to be able to find the fundamentals that are at the very core both of our humanity and of our sense of divinity are crucially important, not only personally, but for our development and fostering of our civil society. Religion has an enormous importance in the way in which it can bring to bear a sense of purpose and meaning in the way in which people come to know themselves and others and begin the process of being able to create a community of purpose and intelligence. I think one of the most important things that came from Nostra Aetate, which was published, voted on, and promulgated on October 28, 1965, 50 years ago, this past October 28th. I think that one of the most important things that we found in this was the recovery of the way in which mystery is to be found in so many different manifestations, articulations, and practices. One of the things that we have benefited from over these years, especially, is the matter of education and learning, learning about one another, and in the process of learning about one another, learning more and more about ourselves. One of the great benefits for the Catholic Church that was the result of Nostra Aetate, which was one document in a process by which the Church was seeking to establish greater dialogue with the whole world on a variety of different matters and questions. And in so doing, it was a concern to come to a deeper self-understanding as well. Some of the documents speak to us about our Church, about revelation, about the mystery of the Church in the world and the times in which we live, about education, and so on and so forth. So that there's a whole array of issues that had been of great concern, really beginning from the time of the late 19th century. And because of the conflicts that were going on in Europe through the 20th century, concerns about having a council in order to be able to talk about these things and to listen to what the world can tell us took more time than would have been anticipated. And so when Pope John the 23rd called the council in the 1950s, already concerns and interests about having this had been in the wind. And so now the dialogue had begun, and this matter of being open to learning became a way in which we began to understand certain ways in which there were blocks and biases that indeed needed to be addressed. We also learned that it was very important for us to be able to re-examine our own tradition in a way that allows us to understand it more fully. This has been a very great benefit for us as a result of Nostra Aetate. The kinds of studies that have gone on in the area of scripture and revelation and tradition have been an enormous benefit to us. And then we have also conversations regarding scriptures that are carried on within the context of a dialogue with members of the Jewish community who are talking to us about the way in which the Hebrew scriptures are understood within the Hebrew community and traditions. So that we have this benefit of an expansion of an understanding and therefore of a way of being able to relate to others so that we are now more capable of being able to being true to ourselves as well as being true to people with whom we are in dialogue. One of the things that I think is important for us is, and especially this evening, is to help to allow others to understand what has been taking place over these last 50 years. And we can't go through every single detail, but when you stop and think of the way in which the change in the understanding of Judaism and the way in which we are able to we were able to address those concerns that the Jewish community had regarding the way in which catechesis, the way our teaching of our own faith was carried out. And in those conversations about how to teach our own faith, we were also able to learn more and more about the way in which the Jewish tradition is so crucial to every single thing that we know of about Jesus and about the way in which he teaches us in regards to the mystery of God, the mystery of the community of the church, the mystery that touches our lives in terms of the need to find healing and redemption so that we are able to enter into an integrated form of living our lives in a way that allow us to have this openness to the mystery and also to understand the great difficulties that we face, all of us face, when we talk about so many different ways that darkness can enter into our lives, the darkness which so oftentimes in our present culture can be so overwhelming. And that is the darkness of the mystery of evil. Because evil is not just a problem to be solved, it is a mystery that has to be entered into. And that is something that we all together continue to need to learn more about. Because it is the way in which we are going to be able to enter into a form of bringing forth a peacefulness within and among ourselves in relationship to our world. And I think that the other thing that becomes so wonderful in this is the way in which friendships develop between those who are enter into dialogue. And friendship is really that kind of, it's, I think, what Augustine calls the inner word of our existence. It's the way in which we have those bonds which we share, despite the fact that there are disagreements and differences, but there is this created unity which allows us to be able to genuinely appreciate and to help increase and foster the kind of ways that people in other traditions are seeking to live their lives as well. Nostra Aetate, I think, has been an enormously important document, and I think it is going to remain even more important as we move toward the next 50 years, because the kind of thing that we need in our cultures is going to be a way in which the spiritual dimension of human existence is capable of being identified and translated into practice, and that when we can recognize that kind of spiritual unfolding in the lives of others, we are all enriched. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Abraham Peck. You know, it's ironic that this evening marks the remembrance of a new beginning between Roman Catholicism and many of the world's religions. But I'd be remiss, I think, if I didn't mention that tonight also marks the remembrance of a terrible end. Because it was on November 9th and 10th, 1938, that the forces of Nazi Germany arose to wage a relentless attack on Jewish life in Germany and Austria, burning synagogues, destroying businesses, and arresting thousands of Jewish men and transporting them to the concentration camps of Dachau, Buchenwald, and Oranienburg. It was the end of 1,000 years of Jewish life in Central Europe. And I guess the question I would ask is, or even the thought that I would have, is if only we had had a Nostra Aetate then, perhaps we would not need to remember the wars against Jews and Judaism and human values that murdered millions. Our next speaker is not only a valued colleague, but an old friend. Rabbi David Fox Sanmel received his Bachelor of Arts with honors in Jewish Studies from The Ohio State University and received his rabbinical ordination at the Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion in Cincinnati. He completed his doctorate at the University of Pennsylvania, where he studied the history and literature of Judaism and Christianity in the Greco-Roman world. He was the founding rabbi, and this is where Maine becomes also very important in his life. He was the founding rabbi of Congregation Beit Ha'am in South Portland, the first Reform congregation in the state of Maine. He's also served as a Jewish scholar at the Institute for Christian and Jewish Studies in Baltimore. Until 2014, Rabbi Sanmel was the Crown Ryan Professor of Jewish Studies at the Catholic Theological Union. David Sanmel, now to his academic and scholarly side, David Sanmel is the co-editor of Christianity in Jewish Terms, and he's also contributed an essay to that volume. He's also the lead editor of a very amazing volume called Irreconcilable Difference, a Learning Resource for Jews and Christians. And David was very happy in Chicago. It may have been cold and snowy in winter, but then all of a sudden in 2014, he got a call. He was asked to become the director of interfaith affairs for the Anti-Defamation League, the ADL, which is well over a century old, and both a group that supports and protects the rights of Jews in America, but also the rights of the wider community. And that position has put my old friend, who I knew as a young, ambitious rabbinic student at Hebrew Union College, puts him now among the two or three most important voices in the American Jewish community's participation in inter-religious dialogue. Boy, have you come a long way, David. So please, welcome my friend, Rabbi David Sanmel.
Boy, after that, I'd better be good. I want to start, Abe, since you talked about my father, to say just a few more words about my family and the generations. My father's father, you've heard a little bit about my father. My father's father came to this country at the turn of the last century from Tsarist Russia, escaping the pogroms. My father was a pioneer in Jewish-Christian relations. And before 1965, though he had some contact with Roman Catholic theologians and scholars, there wasn't a lot of institutional stuff going on. He wasn't invited to talk at seminaries and so forth. My grandfather once came to visit us, and my father said, they're doing a play of Tevye and His Daughters. Would you like to see it? Tevye and His Daughters is the collection of short stories by the great Yiddish author Sholem Aleichem that became a musical called Fiddler on the Roof. Okay, you see, that gets people's attention. I know that. What my father neglected to mention was that the play was being produced at Edgecliff College in Cincinnati. Edgecliff College was a small Catholic women's college known for its drama department. Since my grandfather passed away in 1963, this would have been before Nostra Aetate. So they show up at the theater, they walk into the auditorium, and there they are in the foyer, and my grandfather looks around, and there are priests in collars and nuns in habit, and my grandfather's reaction is to become afraid. Why did you bring me here? Get me out of here, is what he said to my father. Now, before they could leave, of course, some of these folks came over, greeted my father warmly, surrounded him. He convinced my grandfather to stay. It was a wonderful performance. He was very moved. Shortly thereafter, Nostra Aetate was promulgated, and as my father reported, it was as if the floodgates opened up, and at least in the American church, all of a sudden, lots of invitations, conferences, and very close friendships. This is my father's experience, though I should probably predicate it the fact that when my father was growing up in St. Louis, he, like many others of his generation, had the experience of regularly being called Christ killers. He and his friends would take the circuitous route home from school so they would not have to go by the Catholic school lest the boys would beat them up. Okay? I tell this story because things have changed. So you have my grandfather, who was afraid of anybody in clerical garb, even though it probably is a footnote since he was in Tsarist Russia. The folks who instilled that fear were not Roman Catholics, let's be fair. My father was both pre-conciliar and post-conciliar. He experienced both of those. I came of age in a post-Second Vatican Council world. For me, growing up in Cincinnati, Ohio, Shabbat dinner, Passover seders, without somebody from either the Catholic Church or a Protestant church at our table was an unusual evening. And I then went on to teach at the Catholic Theological Union, where I was honored to hold a chair co-funded by a Jew and a Catholic. And if my grandfather were alive today, he would not believe that I have on my iPhone three different pictures from three different occasions of myself with Pope Francis. Now, he might have believed the iPhone. But I don't think it would have been in his ability to conceive of the fact that a grandchild of his would have the opportunity to meet a pope. And let me, before people think that I'm being self-indulgent here, let me also say that at this point in time, for a rabbi to meet a pope is not such a big deal. Cardinal Dolan of New York says it's easier for Jews to get in to see the pope than it is for Roman Catholics. So, but there is a serious point here, and the serious point is that in the space of three generations, we have seen significant change in the way that Catholics in specific, Christians more generally, relate to the Jewish community. Abe also referenced the fact that this is the anniversary of Kristallnacht. And I believe that the Holocaust contributed a significant background to the entire Second Vatican Council and to Nostra Aetate specifically, even though the document doesn't mention it. So we can sort of wonder what would happen had there been a Nostra Aetate, but I'm not sure, for better or for worse, that had there not been a Second World War and a Holocaust, and I would also add in there Nagasaki and Hiroshima, that we probably would not have had the Second Vatican Council and Nostra Aetate. I also would want to make a couple of comments about Nostra Aetate itself. And the first is that it is a remarkable document. And it signifies really a sea change in the relationship of the Catholic Church specifically to the Jewish community, but also to the Muslim world, as well as to Buddhists and Hindus. And I've been involved in a number of events this fall around Nostra Aetate. Most of them have just been Jews and Catholics, so I'm thrilled that this evening we have Jews, Catholics, and Muslims represented on our panel, and I hope that there'll be other opportunities to bring in other traditions as well, because I think if we're going to look far to the future, if all of these religious traditions are going to play a role in the kind of healing that was mentioned earlier, everybody needs to be involved. I also think that in many ways the document Nostra Aetate is more important for what it represents and the process that it began, and there's already been some reference to that this evening, than what is in the document itself. Though, again, I don't want to take anything away from the document. It was a product of its time, and if we wanted to do a text study of it, We could find the weaknesses in it and the things that it omitted or the things that it could have said differently. But what I want to do here is underscore that the church didn't stop with Nostra Aetate, and that it continued specifically in terms of Jewish-Catholic relationship to produce additional documents, notes on the implication of the conciliar document Nostra Aetate, correct presentation of Jews and Judaism and Christian teaching and catechesis. We remember a reflection on the Shoah, the Pontifical Biblical Institute's document, the Jewish people and their scriptures in the Christian Bible. If you think it's easy to remember the names of all of these documents, it's not. And the reason that I say this is that it's not as if the Vatican published Nostra Aetate and said, okay, check that off. But in fact, it has, I think perhaps more than any other church, has really devoted a great deal of time and serious scholarship and theological thinking to the relationship between Catholics and Jews and Catholics and other traditions, and it continues to do so today. It also, and here I turn especially to the role of each of the popes since John the 23rd, Pope St. John the 23rd, who have in their own words and especially in their deeds reinforced what is said theologically and in a scholarly way in the various documents. I had the privilege to be at the interfaith event during the Pope's visit in September at the 9/11 memorial, and the image of that stage, I don't know how many of you have seen those pictures, but the image of that stage with the Pope seated in the very middle, to one side a rabbi, to another side an imam, Hindu, Buddhist, Protestant, all standing on one stage together, all reflecting on the necessity to bring peace into our world, and many other images that I could call up over the years, but I'm trying to be a little bit sensitive to time, despite the fact that you've given a rabbi a microphone. The way in which this evening is something that is happening in many places around the country and around the world, and has, I would say, almost become commonplace. Oh, you got a rabbi and a priest and a mom talking at the university. We need to remember that it has not always been that way, and that what we're doing here this evening represents very difficult work done by many people to overcome the objections in their communities, the fears in their communities, the prejudices in their communities. That's what I think Nostra Aetate is about. That's why I'm pleased to be back in Portland to be part of this, and I look forward to the rest of our discussion. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Lori, the Reverend Lori Whittemore. I'm the founder of Abbey of Hope. We are a virtual interfaith cooperation circle. HOPE stands for Hands of Peace Extended, and I'm glad I got to get up here before my iPhone died because I have his bio on here. So I am so honored that you've all joined us, and it's wonderful to see all these faces out here. I came to interfaith work because of Imam Yahya Hendy. While I was in seminary at Bangor Theological Seminary, I attended a program at Hartford Seminary that encouraged dialogue. Dialogue that includes not only formal, but it includes four total things. Formal dialogue, rolling up your sleeves and doing service together as dialogue. Informal dialogue, like having dinners together and socials. And then it also speaks to sharing sacred space. I had the honor of doing that with Imam Yahya Hendi, and I learned so much. Being a little girl from Maine, going off to Hartford Seminary and meeting some amazing folks and doing dialogue on many levels. And so that's how I came to know him, and I'm so delighted he's come here to speak with you and be a part of this event. Let me share a little bit about him. He is a Muslim chaplain at Georgetown, which was the first university in the country to have a Muslim chaplain. He is also a public policy conflict resolution fellow of the Center for Dispute Resolution of the University of Maryland School of Law and Maryland's Judiciary Mediation and Conflict Resolution Office. He is the founder and director of Clergies Beyond Borders, and he's really one of the most sought after imams to speak in the country. So it's my great honor. Please put your hands together and welcome Imam Yahya Hendi.
Well, well, well. I know after all of those presentations, you are tired and ready to go home. And I do not blame you, my friends. The rabbi said, you never give a microphone to a rabbi. You never give a microphone to an imam, my friends. And how now you had three clergy who got the microphone. So we asked the president to get the breakfast ready. Sit back and take a nap. Before I indulge or dive into my presentation, I just want to make a comment that's rather important for me. I heard the term Abrahamic faiths a few times in the last hour or so. It's rather a term that's sensitive to me. I do not feel comfortable with the term. Lori forgot to tell you that my nickname in Washington, D.C. is the feminist imam. And being the feminist I am, I feel that all of our traditions only talk about the men and overlook the role of women in our histories. God created Adam and Eve together. In the Muslim tradition, God took a handful of dust from earth, from different places, made a pile of it and said, be, and it became Adam and Eve together. And therefore, our humanity is not, and I know I am challenging some of your perceptions of religion and of Islam and Fox News narrative of Islam. I know I am diverting a little bit away from the what might be perceived as the biblical notion on the creation. But in Islam, that's what God did and how the humanity came about with one command. And therefore, we from day one existed together and embarked upon the human journey together as men and women. And therefore, I believe we have to start speaking about Sarah and Hajar or Hajar or Hagar. We need to start talking more about Mary and Khadija and Aisha. We need to talk about women that have contributed to the making of our traditions. And if interreligious dialogue is about anything, for me, it's about justice, and number one is gender justice, women and men working together, and we cannot work together unless we give women a voice. If you have yet to realize, I do have a heavy accent. Why? Because when I came to America 25 years ago, I first lived in Texas, and that's where I learned my English. Anyone from Texas here? I'm sorry. That's where I learned my English, so my heavy accent goes back to Texas. Once a cowboy went into a church to pray. The minister was waiting for more people to show up. Finally, no one came in. So the minister said, "Son, would you like me to go ahead and start?" And the cowboy said, "Sir, if only one cow showed up, I would still take care of it." So the minister went on with 45 minutes service and homily. Only when he lost his voice, he sat down and said, "Sir, how was it?" The cowboy said, "Sir, if only one cow showed up, I would never give it all the hay I had." So I'll give you less and engage more with Jennifer when she is ready to engage us and you. My sisters and my brothers, in my backyard, and by the way, I'm not going to go into theology, I'm not going to go into history, I'm going to talk about my own story with Vatican II, I'm going to talk about my own story with interreligious dialogue. After all, I believe that we need to transform dialogue to diapractice. We need to move beyond talking about the theory and about what separates or brings us together into practicing dialogue, rolling up our sleeves, and getting to the dirty business together, feeding the hungry, taking care of the poor, sheltering the homeless, making sure that we together work on projects in Africa, in Asia, in the Middle East, here in our hoods. How can we come together, engage the best of who we are as religions, get to know who we are not by reading the Quran or the Bible or the Torah, however important those things are, but rather engaging our traditions personally and humanly. So that is, for me, the real challenge of interreligious dialogue. If you come to my backyard, I have a little pond there. And when I work on planting flowers around it in April, my kids ask me once in a while, "Baba, Daddy, why do you have to insist that we have more flowers with more colors around it?" And I say, "Kids, those colors remind me of the human family and its colors. It reminds me that we are the black and the white and the brown. It reminds me that we are the Jew and the Christian and the Muslim, that we are the Hindu and the Buddhist. We are the Baha'i, we are the Sikh. We are those who believe in God and those who don't believe in God. We are all kinds of colors, all kinds of shapes, all kinds of interests. God created all the colors. And what makes my pond beautiful and attractive to my neighbors is the many colors it has. That is you, that is me, that is us, and that is interreligious dialogue." So how can we not just tolerate our different colors, our different theologies? The challenge, by the way, tolerance is a bad thing. Tolerance means I'll tolerate you, but in my heart, I hate your guts. This is what tolerance really means. I think the challenge of interreligious dialogue, the challenge of Vatican II, is that we celebrate our differences, that we find God in the other. Because as Islam teaches, but also as Christianity and Judaism teach, إن الله خلق آدم على صورته, that God created us in the image of God. So the Baha'is are created in the image of God. The Sikh are created in the image of God. And therefore, the table of God cannot be empty from any of God's children. And for me, that is interreligious dialogue. And that has to transform our politics, our policies as a country, and the politics of every country around the world. I was so much moved watching the new Prime Minister of Canada. If you haven't watched that, with tears in my eyes. 50% women, 50% men. But if you look behind him, oh my God, people from different religions, different backgrounds, different walks of life. And he said, this is the 2015. This is no longer 2000 before the birth of Jesus. We live in a new age, and the challenge of the new age is that we work together ensuring that everyone has a room around the table. So no more anti-Semitism. No more Islamophobia. No more anti-Baha'ism in Iran. No more anti-Shia sentiments in Saudi Arabia. No more anti-Sunni sentiments in Iran. No more anti-Muslim in America. My friends, I want to challenge you tonight to transform yourselves after you leave this hall so that you may become a voice. Tell our politicians we are tired of divisive politics. And I urge the Muslims who are with us tonight, my friends, my sisters, and my brothers, stand up and defend your faith from the Muslims who kidnapped your faith and gave it a bad name. Yes. When you see Christians demonized in Muslim lands, it should not be the Christians crying out against that. It should be you, the Muslims. You should see any attack on any church, an attack on every mosque worldwide. This is why when there was a church burning in Lahore, Pakistan, a few years ago, I picked myself out, I traveled around America, I brought together a few imams, we collected money, we went to Lahore to help rebuild that church in Lahore, in Pakistan, to make sure that the Christians of Pakistan do not feel that they are a religious minority. So you, the Muslims, if you want people to respect you, you need to respect yourselves. And you only respect yourselves when you stand up for others as much as you want others to stand up for you. I say the same thing to Christians in the United States of America. When you see people using the Bible, using Jesus, the unconditional love Messiah and his name to demonize Muslims because they read another scripture, you the Christians should stand up and say, not in the name of Jesus, not in the name of the New Testament, not in the name of the Bible. You should tell the politicians, my friends, who use Christianity to demonize your fellow Muslim neighbors, not in the name of Jesus, because those who love Jesus, Jesus teaches them, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. When a mosque was vandalized in Panama City, Florida, it was not the Muslims who rebuilt it. It was the Catholics and the Jews collected the money to help rebuild the mosque. When a Jewish daycare was vandalized in L.A. a few years ago, it was the Muslims who objected to that and stood up before even the Jewish community to say, wait a minute, we stand by our Jewish sisters and by our Jewish brothers. For me, that is Vatican II. That's the challenge of interreligious dialogue, that we stand up for each other, away from dialogue into dire practice, away from dogmas into a religion or religions that are relevant. And our religions cannot be relevant unless they respond to the current challenges of our societies. In the Quran, it teaches, وَلَوْ أَرَادَ رَبُّكَ لَجَعَلَ النَّاسَ أُمَّةً وَاحِدًا. If God had wanted, God would have made all of you the same. And therefore, for me, the Quran is challenging all of us to understand our pluralism as a good thing, our diversity as a good thing. And therefore, in the name of Vatican II, in the name of interreligious dialogue, our politics has to be, our theology has to be, our ethics has to be, that you do not need to be wrong for me to be right. I do not need to preach that you are doomed to hell for me to be saved by God. My kids, my friends, I have four kids, and I travel a lot. I change ties all the time. I try to keep my hair short. You know why? I go home, and Miriam comes to my lab, my youngest daughter. Baba, I love you. Good. So Zach comes in. Here, your older brother. He's my daddy. Get off him. And then Satine comes in, the older sister. No, he's my daddy. Get off him. Then now the big Noor Jannah comes in, senior in high school. He's my daddy. You get off him. What do I usually do? After seeing my tie in pieces and my hair all directions, I say, you are all my kids and I am your father. And I say, that is who God is. God is able with God's rahmah and mercy and compassion to engage all of us, to include all of us in God's heavens. And therefore, let us give up on that theology that I'm the chosen Muslim, I'm the chosen Jew, I'm the chosen Christian, or God only speaks to me and does not speak for others. But I say, even if you believe that, do not be the ultimate judge. There is a higher judge, God, the Almighty, of us all. My friends, I conclude with this. And I know oh my God, I'm sorry. I told you never give me a microphone. Interreligious dialogue for me means the following three phrases, and I hope you go home and think about them. Number one, we can pray together. Number two, we can serve together. And number three, we can learn together. We can find ways to pray for one another. As the nation came together, if you remember, on September 11, regardless of faith, we all, if you remember, we joined hands and we cried together and we had those hugs and embraces. That's America. That's religion. That's God. We can pray together. I have a program in my city where I live, Frederick, Maryland, called Hanukkah Christmas Hajj Festival. And we come together at the end of every year to celebrate together. And we bring Baha'is and Hindus and Buddhists and Sikh together. So can we find ways to pray together? Maybe not in the church, maybe not in the synagogue, maybe not in the mosque, but we need to find prayerful moments that bring our hearts together. But also we need to learn about each other. After all, you fear that which you do not know. My Christian and Jewish friends in the audience, I challenge you to know Islam. But I tell you, you would love Islam in every way, shape, and form if you knew it from within. Islam does not teach violence. Islam does not teach hate. Islam does not teach demonization of women as you hear. Trust me. Islam teaches me to love you. Islam teaches me to adore you. Islam teaches me to stand by you. You fear Islam because you don't know Islam. You fear Islam because of the politicization of religion in the Arab world and here in America. To invade that fear, come to learn about others and about each other. We have a course at Georgetown called Interreligious Encounter. It's a rabbi, a priest, and an imam. We teach a course for 5 months every year together. And imagine what happens in that classroom and the kind of engagement we have. So we need to pray together. We need to learn together. And we need to serve together. We need to join hands, get the sandwiches ready, and deliver them to Habitat for Humanity or to homeless shelters. We need to travel together to build homes in Africa for the poor. We need to work together to build homes for Jews, Christians, and Muslims, and Buddhists, and Hindus. Let us work together. Let love live. Thank you.
You've been listening to Beyond Nostra Aetate, Interreligious Dialogue in a Time of Conflict, here on Speaking in Maine. Time restraints have forced us to cut the question and answer portion of our talk from the broadcast. We have made the full, unedited hour of Q&A available on our website, however, along with today's program. You can find both under the On Demand tab at mpbn.net. There, look for Audio On Demand. Charles Beck is our executive producer. For Speaking in Maine, I'm Gordon Fellis.